You've got the morning show here with Aaron. I just said to Marie, grab a mic, and she like groaned. You have to have the mic, Marie. You can't be on the radio without a microphone.
All good. Oh, you're okay. We're there.
You're good. And we're going to talk. I mentioned we're going to talk about grief. No one could see me on the out on Radio Land, but I pulled a face when I said that because it just sounded like the sort of thing that would make people turn off the radio. But with the idea is we're trying to move. Yeah, we're trying to. If anyone's still listening, the plan is to find a way out of grief or to process grief. You know, that sort of thing, go somewhere good. And we have been talking the last few weeks on the radio quite a bit about people are stressed. It's like we've come out of the. Like all the restrictions and the fears around, most of the fears around COVID are gone now, and we've come out of all the difficult period, and now people are having a reaction, sort of like a delayed reaction or collective delayed reaction, although people were reacting at the time. And some of it, I guess, is the grief, as you always say, the grief is behind the thing that's happening. So we're not actually seeing, and it took quite a while for us to pin this down, because we're not seeing people grieving, we're seeing people reacting in whatever ways they do with the grief below the surface. I remember the first time a friend of mine died, like I was about in my mid-30s, and my wife noticed I was quite grumpy for a while. I didn't really understand why, but it was the very first time anyone of my age that I'd sort of grown up with, or not, or I didn't know them at university, had passed on, and it was just a new experience, and obviously an unexpected one. In the mid-30s, so...
And
I guess that's one example, one little example where we might be.
Grief can often sit at the core of many of our issues, and it can be, over time, covered over, layer upon layer upon layer of different experiences we have in life, and then we forget about the grief that may have started very much where we didn't grieve and we didn't go through the process of grief. We kind of pushed it away or ignored it, but grief won't be ignored, unfortunately.
And the other thing we talked about with Stephanie Philp is it's not necessarily grief for, that was last week, not necessarily grief for the loss of a close family member, which is what we always associate the word grief with that, but could be loss of anything, a loss of a dream even, something as kind of hard to pin down as that. So that's, I think that might be why it took so long to figure out what might be happening, and a lot of people won't be aware that might be what's affecting them. Yeah,
absolutely. And we don't, because ultimately we don't like to go to grief. Grief causes sadness, and so that's often something we try and avoid. We don't like to feel like that. So grief can look like anger, because anger is the first thing we go to. If we don't want to go to grief, if we don't want to feel what we're feeling, then we often can turn that into more of a response of anger towards something. So something happens and, you know, we get a loss and we become angry towards that, what's happened. But ultimately what the first reaction is actually we're hurting. You know, we're sad. It's painful. And that's a place we don't want to go to. So grief can look like anger.
And we've talked a lot about in the last year about, you know, families are divided or friendships are lost because of the divisions that occurred. There's no need to go into the details of why that happened. We all know. But maybe do you need to process the grief before you can move on to repairing things? We need to acknowledge the grief.
There's a great movie called Inside Out. It's a kids' movie.
Yes.
I encourage people to have a look at that through adult eyes. It's a really good movie that shows how if we ignore all sadness, if we try and push away from our pain, then every other emotion is affected in us, because, you know, to get to a place of happiness, we actually have to go through our grief, our sadness. And like I said, sadness, if we push it away, it can look like anger. We get a response to something and we become angered towards it, and everything is focused on, you know, that anger and how we're feeling towards that. But actually, if you were to take that away, what we're really feeling is hurt. And that's a vulnerable place to be. And if you've got a persona where you're quite a together person, or that you're not affected by things, you know, to feel grief or to feel sadness is not a comfortable place. We're not used to this. This is not something that we tend to move through. We do it in funerals, obviously, when we...
We have a ritual to,
we do.
To be part
it's,
of.
It's about loss. Grief, we tend to tag grief around a loss of a loved one or a loss of a pet or, you know, somebody has gone from us. But grief, like you say, is grief can be a split up of a family, you know. Grief can be a loss of, you know, say, a loss of a job, or grief can be so many things that unable to see somebody that you really wanted to see, and you were, you know, all geared up to see them, and then it didn't happen. There's grief there, you know. You've built a picture around that expectation of that visit. And you know, maybe that can be turned in a different way when we get annoyed that somebody didn't turn up, or, you know, but really, actually, we're hurting. That's not a place that we find comfortable to sit in. Mm.
And I suspect something that's happening too is that, like, everyone seems to be, well, not everyone, because that's never true, 100%. But
that's the language we use.
Yeah, a lot of people are overreacting to things at the moment, and I think what can happen is they'll overreact, and then I'll overreact, but I will think I'm just reacting to their overreaction, and I won't realise that I'm actually overreacting more than I would have as well.
Mm.
I'm trying to, yeah. Does that make sense? Because everyone's overreacting, you don't realise that you're part of it too.
Yeah, well, we push each other's buttons to get a reaction in many ways. You know, we talk about things that are, you know, happening around us, and that everyone has an opinion, and yeah, it can lead to, you know, obviously arguments and trying to prove our point. But even that, if you take the layers away, what's really going on is that there's probably disappointment there. There's loss of something, even if it's a loss of your voice, of being heard, of being listened to. That's grief, you know. We put that together like, well, no one listens to me, you know. But if you were to take that away, you know, you're hurting because you're not being heard, and that's a lonely place. Mm. So there's a lot of messages that come with that that may not be spoken out, but certainly happen in our head. And it affects our thinking and how we see ourselves and how we see ourselves in our community and society or families. So grief can certainly look like anger. If, you know, I think about domestic violence and volatile homes, sitting at the bottom of all that is grief. Mm. You know, somebody's hurting. Hurting people hurt people. That's how it works, unless you've dealt with your own pain, and that's going to come out in some form, in some arena, as something else. It's going to look like anger. It's going to be a pushback. Mm.
So what do you recommend, O wise counsellor, for the community? So it's a good thing I know you well, isn't it? Do that to you.
Well,
but what I know, because I was thinking, like, there's all these thoughts have gone through my head before I said that, so I should explain. Mm. Like, normally you deal one on one with people, and you say that you do person centred counselling,
yep.
Is that, and so which means that, like, if I come to see you, I'm the expert on me. You don't prescribe things.
Totally.
Yeah, but and then now I'm asking you to prescribe for the community. I realise, and that came out in that slightly.
Well,
sarcastic comment.
It would be, you can't just rip the Band-Aid off. You know, there's a scar, there's a wound under all of this. We need to go gently. We don't want to go in with a meat cleaver and start.
Rightio.
We want to go in with an archaeologist's brush. That's a person-centred term.
Yeah.
You know, just gently blow away the dust. But obviously, not everyone out there is going to do that. We do tend to go straight in, and people get defensive. We want to cover up our wounds. We don't want to be exposed in our wounds. So I don't think it's as simple as saying, you know, at the bottom of anger sits grief, because obviously most people don't want to go there. They don't want to accept that. They just are angry, annoyed, frustrated, and sometimes they don't even know why. They just feel that way. And like I say, it's layer upon layer. So you may not get to the bottom of your grief until you really do some investigating and what they call unresolved grief, where we didn't grieve what we've lost. We didn't acknowledge it.
We've probably all got that anyway.
Well, often we run away from it.
To one degree or another from something could be years ago.
Absolutely. So. It's, you know, especially in the work that I do, yeah, as we look and we investigate and talk about our lives, we come to places in our memories where we do. There are signposts to our grief. And if we follow them and are brave enough to do the journey, there's probably going to be some tears, you know, and that's not something we're comfortable with. We don't like to cry. We don't like to be emotional. We like the emotion of love and happiness and joy, all the good ones. But, tears in our society have been seen as, I mean, obviously now we've got people talking about it's okay to cry and for men and all of us.
The message hasn't really sunk in, I've got to be honest.
No, it's
it's going to be a slow, might take a couple of more generations at least.
Well, to feel an emotion is not like sadness, is not a pleasant thing. So none of us obviously want to go there.
But sometimes some people find that it's the attempts to resist feeling it end up becoming more painful than the feeling itself.
Well, that's where anger will come in because once we resist...
Hold on, I'm clenching my fists now for visual impact.
Yeah, well, other things will trigger us. So it may not even be about our grief. It could be something completely different. But because we're already holding something in, we are on tender hooks. And so we might go from 0 to 10 on something really quickly. Instead of being able to process and logic something out, we go to, 8, 9, 10, where we're actually angry about something and having a response to it, that's not going to be helpful. It's not going to solve anything. In fact, it's probably going to cause more issues. And so, and like I said before, in domestic violence, it's quite, we wouldn't see grief as being something that is sitting at the core of why a person lashes out or becomes violent over something. But I can guarantee you there is grief there.
can we at least be like mindful that this is the environment we're in at the moment?
Well, that would be
And like consider that when things happen that we might be more easily triggered and other people might more easily be triggered.
Well, that would be great, Aaron. But I don't think we
that might be all we can achieve today with a radio show, right? This is not actually a counselling session for a community, but.
Well, we can recognise what's happening within us. You know, is your heart racing? Are you getting sweaty palms? Are you feeling uncomfortable? You know, there are certain warning signs that you're becoming stressed and something's going to happen. So it's really capturing those beginning symptoms before hitting the response that we get. And that takes some it's challenging to stop and check in with yourself, what's happening to me right now? My heart's going. And so it's at that point where we have to, it's healthy for us to then self-soothe, what do I need to do for me right now? Breathe is a good idea. Breath, to breathe in, good deep breath, breathe in through the nose, push out the tummy, out through the mouth. Really good deep breaths where the oxygen is getting through the body. Because our body gets anxious when it can't receive the oxygen it needs. And so we see anxiety as a panic attack. But actually what the body's doing is trying to get more oxygen in. And so we do a lot of deep breathing and it's all through the mouth. But actually to get that oxygen circulating really well, it's got to come in through the nose, push out the tummy and hold and out, all the way out through the mouth and then 5 good deep breaths like that will bring you back online.
What about being mindful that other people might be easily triggered, maybe being more forgiving?
Well, that would be wonderful too, wouldn't it?
I'm not telling people to be more forgiving, but just recognise that...
Not to push people's buttons. Some people actually...
Like if you've got a friend and their parents just died, right, you wouldn't try to hold them to the same standard of behaviour that you would normally... I guess that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, and that's something that we can, we're aware of it. We're aware that person has had a loss, and so we have more compassion there. more empathy. We're going to be a bit more forgiving in how we may receive information from them, because we know that they're not in the right place right now. That's something we can see, but it's the unseen that, you know, we can push people's buttons and we can get a reaction off them and quite enjoy the reaction. I think that's quite cruel. When we do that to people.
What do we get out of it? Obviously, we're getting something out of it. Like, is it making us feel more secure or in control or something? I'm guessing.
Well, I think it's more of an attitude that we find in people, and maybe they're not recognising that within themselves, but the ones that enjoy getting those responses from others that are, you know, are causing them stress. That's something, I don't think the person who's doing that is ever going to recognise that within themselves. It's more when people will point it out. Man, you really do push people's buttons, or, you know. And then you've got to actually accept that you're doing that. And not many of us want to. So.
We can be that honest with ourselves, though.
Oh, well, it'd be great if we went on a more self-discovery of who we are and how
just
we...
Just say, the reality was I was deliberately pushing someone's button there.
And how wonderful maybe I to don't be that, to do honest. That anymore. But even to be that honest, say, so I was...
Because that can be a private conversation where no one has to mount an intervention to get you to stop, right? That can just be the...
Well, we can diffuse situations by our own admittance, by saying, hey, that was pretty harsh what I just said, or... this probably wasn't the nicest thing I could have said right now, but not many of us pull back and take responsibility for the things that we're saying that are causing other people grief or pain. Often that's coming from our own pain. To actually see that, to put the mirror up and have a look at yourself, that's the healthiest thing we could ever do. I mean, that would be great if everyone just said, that's great. I'd like to take that on board. I'm going to have a look at myself, how I respond, the language that I use, how I am with this person or that person, or I'm going to smile more. I wonder if that's going to be good for me. we don't walk around like that.
I've been doing this. I can't do the hand signal, but I can, but you won't see it on the radio. Just my two fists pushing against each other. I keep using that at the moment, and talking about how there's a lot of that happening, and while that's happening, you can't get very far with people. But can we be mindful of using language that's not going to create that situation, which is things that because we have our culture is one that expects to use force. We talk about making things happen and making people do stuff quite normally, but no one actually wants to be made to do something. No one enjoys that. I know you were talking before we went on the air about the language that people are using around kids, presumably teenagers to young ones, I don't know, but when we're stressed, we're more likely to want to force things, I guess. So do you just want to talk about that, the language thing?
Yeah, I think, I've brought it up before, that you should be doing this and you need to be doing that. The really driven, anxiety-driven language, when we've got somebody standing over us telling us, you need to be, or you should be. There's often a finger that comes out with that.
Finger pointing going on.
It's very directive, and, when we hear language like that, we know we've got something we have to do, which is fine. It depends on how we are driving that. If it's coming out in a way that is very authoritative, then there's going to be anxiety with that. If we could look at our language like it's, it would be really good, it would be helpful, very supportive, but we don't. We tend to land on the language that we grew up around, which is you should be doing this and you need to be doing that, You should be doing your homework, you need to be cleaning your room, you need to put your school bag away.
You're raising the anxiety levels now, Marie.
Well, it's just
by modelling it temporarily.
It's just a driven language. Could you please put your seat bag away? Your school bag away, It's language we land on very easily because it's what we grew up around. It's very authoritative, and there's nothing wrong with authority, but it's what's sitting behind that language. If that's all the language we're ever using to get something done, then everything becomes driven from that word. you know, you should be, you need to.
Yep. Now we're thumping the desk.
And thinking, what other word could I use here? Because it will change how we receive that information.
But also, my observation is that it creates resistance.
Absolutely.
And the more you use it, the more resistance you get, and then the more you have, and the harder you have to go in to get the same result. And
well done. You're right. It causes resistance, and resistance is about pushback. Oh, I'm not going to do it. You know, like whatever we might say, instead of just doing what's been asked, and getting on with it. You know, we push back.
I'm thinking of, because I've coached a lot of kids in soccer over the last decade. And there are some where the best thing I could do is say nothing to them, because anything that I said would immediately be filtered through that feeling of resistance.
Yeah.
And so you really have to, at most you just have to invite them and say, you might like, it might be fun to do this. Like, that's about as far as you could go. Anything else, because then everything...
Well, how about we do it this way?
Because what happens? Yeah, what happens is, but even sometimes that, because kids see that as code for you need to. After a while, the resistance is so strong that anything like that, oh, you might like to try this, they're like, no, you're just trying to soften that you should be.
Yeah.
Right? They've worked that out. And so literally for some kids, and from quite a young age, just saying nothing was the best way to get – that was how I got the best performance out of them.
That's interesting.
Yeah, not many, but it's there.
Look, words.
I don't want to cast myself as the expert in any of this. It's just my
experiences
I've had in the world.
But none of us are experts.
It's easy to sound like it when you've got a microphone.
No, we're all individuals, and we all have our own different personalities, how we respond to things. You can't just lump us all in the same box and say, well, this is how we do it, because we're all so different. So knowing your own child and how they respond, or knowing your own partner and how they respond, or, you know, it's about knowing the person and wanting the best for them, not the worst. It's interesting that we get into relationships and that can be the one person that we can resist the most, and yet we're in relationship. You would think that we would want the best for that person, but oddly, we can destroy the very best in them to become better than them. It's pretty nasty things that we do as humans to rise to the top, so to speak. And it happens all over the place, whether it be in families or in jobs or even in positions in community. We will vie to get to that place, you know. But if we saw the best in another person and they saw the best in us, we would still rise, but we would rise in our natural giftings and who we are, not who someone else says we are.
It's hard when there's no accountability. Like, when there's accountability, someone's accountable in some way, just that they've maybe even just seen that they're in public. Like no one ever treats me badly on the radio, for instance, right? Never happened, because it's like really public, the ultimate public thing you can do. But the trick is to have that self-control when there's no accountability. And with kids, there really isn't any accountability. If it's just you and a small child, there's nothing that's going to stop you from misusing what power you have. And it might not be much power, but there's power. It's a power relationship.
Well, absolutely. And we look for that power in words, in actions, obviously. But our words can tell us a lot about a person if we're really listening.
This is something I dwelled on, is how much resistance we've put into our kids just by the way we treat kids in our culture. And I don't think, a lot of people don't like discussing this, because then you get arguments about kids have to understand that, in fact, there's people's value systems that they are superior to kids and that kids should do what they're told. Like, it's actually a value, I think. And sometimes you run up against that and there's no, you can't discuss it. But I just feel like that we put so much, think we do so many things with our children and our culture that it builds this huge resistance in them. Like, I still don't like saying thank you, for instance. Like, it's still not my instinct to say thank you. Like, I have a resistance to that from being told it as a kid. Right? You've got Marie's calculating whether we're going into a counselling session now for Aaron, who can't say thank you. Like, I can. It's not a huge thing. But I was just trying to turn it back on myself rather than point the finger at other people, right?
Hmm.
So that's a thing that I still feel resistance about, I think.
Yeah. And
that's not that big a deal, right?
Well, we can talk about that. Well, it can be, because it's about then receiving what that feels like to say thank you, you know, that you're acknowledging something that has been of worth to you.
But I'm just talking about the being repeatedly told to say thank you.
Oh, okay, to be told to say thank you. Yeah, that's a bit forced, huh?
Yeah, all the time. Yeah. Mm. Say thank you.
Right. Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah, and that's just one little example of resistance that I see.
Well, to naturally potential receive for resistance. That feeling of being thankful for something is probably going to have more meaning to you and your system than being told to say thank you. I mean, sure, we get taught to thank a person for something, and I think that's totally valuable.
Oh, that might be a good
idea. Absolutely valuable.
Yeah.
But I guess at some point when you've been taught enough around that, and if you don't respond to a thank you with a thank you for something, then more I guess it would be the parent later on saying, hey, you know, I noticed you didn't say thank you. And going into that and asking some questions rather than the forcing of something. Because then we teach ourselves to do something because we're told to do it, not because we actually genuinely are doing that.
Which is the opposite of the vibe you're trying to create by saying thanks.
Yeah, and often we can teach ourselves to the masks we wear, where in reality we're not feeling what we're saying. We're not actually genuine. That can be taught in us, I guess, out of a structure. This is how you're meant to do it.
Yeah.
And if you don't do it this way, then you're not conforming to what, you know, is required of you. To more teach in the fact that you're genuine, you know, because you are thankful. You know, you've received that, and that's a part of sharing ourself with another person out of a place of wanting to do that, not because I've been told to do that. And if your child doesn't respond with a thank you and they, you know, it was obviously required in that point, then as a parent, that's the skill of the parent to later on not shame the child out in the moment, but actually later
on. Because that shame will build resistance to
everything we do. Yeah, if we embarrass a child or pull them up in front of others, it's not going to do so well for them down the track, because shame can come in very quickly.
Yeah.
And shame is not something that comes from us. Shame comes from the outside in.
Do you know, there's a lot of shaming that goes on around the whole thank you. So now the more we get into this, the more of a minefield it seems to be. But I see amongst adults, sometimes it's like someone will drop a hint, oh, you didn't say thank you, you know? And it's like a little attempt to shame the other person, and and then that goes back to what you were talking about before about that kind of vine for supremacy, kind of thing that we can do with our bad behavior.
Absolutely.
So how did thank you become such a minefield?
It's a feeling that, you know, we're receiving something really good and nourishing. Why do we resist that? I don't know. Or why do we resist giving that out? Maybe that's a part of being vulnerable towards another person, like I'm thanking you, you know.
Yeah,
you who is not of good standing, or you who does not come up to my my level, you know.
This is all status stuff as well.
It can be.
What a mess. How did we get to this? Some people will be listening going, oh, for goodness sakes, I just say thank you when I mean it.
Yeah.
Leave it at that. Yeah.
Isn't that great? You know, well, we do tend to go to the negative more than we go to the positive. That's ingrained in us. We need to. So there we go. We're loaded with this.
That's the language we use. Yeah. We use it on ourselves as well.
And even for me, I'll stop and I'll go, actually, it would be helpful if we were to challenge some of that within ourselves. Just because you have information around language or information on how to do something in a more healthy way does not mean that we just suddenly pick it up and it happens. Even for me, you know, I should, I need, they're in my language. I have to, in the point when I hear myself use that, I have to pull back too and go, okay, there it is. What else could I use? And I just do it naturally. You know, I'm not afraid to go, okay, well, that would be more helpful, or that would be more supportive if we did it this way. I'll pull back on the word when I hear myself do it. That's the best we can do. We're not about ticking boxes and getting it, you know, oh, 10 out of 10, you got that right. That's, again, it's not. It's more about changing ourself within ourself.
Yeah.
You know, the things that we've been taught, the traditions or the language that we've been brought up with, that's so ingrained in us, and our response to that is so ingrained, we don't check ourselves. It's second nature.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the mind your P's and Q's, the politeness thing, something that really stood out when I started working in an office in the building industry, as young men and teenage boys are like really rude to each other. We were really like there was, and you kind of, it's just normal, kind of, you know. I mean, you might have concerns about it, but I'm just saying that's just normal as you go through that. And then I started working in an office. And you're ringing builders and you're ringing engineers and, you know, you're talking to all sorts of people. And I was really struck by how polite and friendly everybody was.
Mm.
This it seemed like, by contrast, an extreme friendliness.
Right.
But I think everyone understood that if all the business activity was to proceed and things were to get done, that you don't want to be throwing a whole lot of crap into the mix as well. You wanted to keep a good relationship. In fact, everyone in business should understand that the relationships are so important. You've got to
Absolutely.
Cultivate good relationships to make sure everything runs smoothly. And I think just everyone knows that. But it was such a contrast from going from a bunch of teenagers and young men who were rude and obnoxious to each other because they were free of, there was no one on their shoulder telling them say thank you.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like, that was that free part of life. But then to be able to move on and see everyone's just doing it. No one had to tell me. I could just see that everyone was doing it. So you joined.
So you learned.
Yeah. Learned by observing was way more effective than being told.
And I agree. Learning by observing. I'm thinking of a guy that came to our house years ago and he cleaned carpets. And we didn't have any, we don't have any carpets. We have mats. So we've got a wooden floor. And I was like, oh, you know, I don't really need my carpets done.
Oh, like a travelling salesman sort of thing.
Yeah,
oh, yep, yep.
But he was so, he was such a nice person.
Right.
Yeah, really. I mean, we got him to clean our mats in the end. But it was his way of being. He was just such a genuine and nice person. And anyway, long story short, I ended up ringing up his company and saying, you know, giving his name over and saying how awesome he was and what a great job he did, and just really valued him in who he was, basically. And they said to me, oh my gosh, we've never had anybody ring, and because they're up in Auckland and he's, like say, a travelling salesperson, we've never had anybody ring and compliment our workers, and they really appreciated it. Like, wow, we really appreciate that you've took the time out to do that. And, you know, it made me feel good. I mean, I didn't have to do that. I mean, I thought he was a great person, and so did my husband, and we really valued who he was, but we didn't have to go any further and say anything.
Yeah.
But the fact is, getting that feedback from a person in the company, you know, it lifts everybody. Everyone kind of like, yeah, you know, and why wouldn't we want to value somebody for doing a great job or for being a pleasant person?
You know, that's the easiest way to surprise people sometimes is by being nice to, when in a situation where it's not required. People are
that's really hard.
So, but sometimes people are like really surprised. They're like, what?
Well, it's a skill.
Is it a trick?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a skill to not join in with everyone else when we are tearing something down or when we're getting very negative. It's not easy to be the one that comes in and goes, well, yeah, hang on a minute, so do we really know what's going on in this person's world, what's happening for them right now, why they're like that? Yeah, nobody wants to hear that. They just want to nail the person and everyone to agree.
But sometimes also if you actually do stop it just by saying, oh, I don't feel, just a real gentle thing, I don't feel that way, I kind of like that person, you know.
Yeah, or like, I'm finding this really uncomfortable.
I know they've done nice things for me. Like
that's the. I mean, yeah, pointing out the value that you've seen in a person because none of us are going to be running on all cylinders all the time. You know, we're not going to be these full of life and full of beans and encouragement. We need each other to do that. Sometimes we're a little bit empty, and how wonderful to have somebody come in and fill that gap for us in that moment where we can go away and think, well, yeah, I've had a really terrible day, but man, I really appreciated somebody, you know, whatever they said or you know. I mean, it's a change of lifestyle. It's a change within ourselves to be that way. Do I encourage people to do that? Totally. Do I encourage people to see the best rather than the worst? Absolutely. Can we always do it all the time? Probably not, because we're not built that way. But we are built to be in relationship with each other, and so we can glean from another person or be encouraged or upheld by another person when others are tearing us down, you know, because you'll always find something. If you want to, about a person in the moment to knock them off at the knees. It's a very cruel way of being. Not something I would particularly want to be around.
No, but it happens. I wanted to come back to, we were talking about the language before and the things of talking, especially talking to young people, oh, you need to do this or you should do this.
Mm.
And people might be a little bit like, well, that's not that bad. So I wanted to refer, like there's... non-violent communication as a concept, and some people have turned it into a bit of a religion, but just generally the idea that's someone's attempt to kind of codify or understand or explain what language does, and I also know that the Parenting with Non-Violence courses, which I think this one's still going on at the moment, that really is an attempt, what is a successful attempt to get underneath and behind all that and figure out ways of dealing with your kids, because as we all know, we get stressed and tired, and we just, the things our parents said are what comes out of our mouth. So there's kind of, you have to be conscious.
Well, we give too much instruction to kids. Kids' brains are still developing. Often as parents, we will explain something and then give the backstory to it.
Right. Overwhelm them with data.
Wow. I mean, you've probably lost them within the first, you know, two sentences, really.
I noticed that coaching, you can only... Especially in groups, you get kids in groups, and the propensity to switch off is
absolutely
is very strong.
Because they're directional, you know, it's like you give them a direction.
You give one direction at a time. That's all you can do.
That's right. Yeah. Because their brains aren't like ours. They aren't going to sit down and work this out or see the bigger picture or the whole picture. They're just going to hear what you're saying, and if there's too much information there, so if you say, oh, Johnny, I want you to put your school bag away and I need it done by blah, blah, blah because I'm out to do da, 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 and then we're off to it's like you've lost Johnny.
Overload.
He's probably with you getting in the car right now going off to where that last response was rather than the first response of Johnny, you need to put your, there we go, or it would be good for you,
you
too.
It,
it would be good for you or...
Or can you put,
can you put
your bag under there?
Can you go and put your bag away?
Yeah.
I mean, unless we catch our own language, we'll never hear it. It's so second nature for us. It's ingrained.
And I guess we need to think about how it feels for us. Just stop and think, actually, how does it feel, like you say, physically?
Mm.
How does it feel physically when someone talks like that to us?
Well, when we get that all the time, we end up being on tenterhooks. It's all about, I need to get that done. I've got this to do and I've got that to do. And it's just these ongoing
Yeah, I think I do that to myself during my work day.
Yeah, well, it can be, it's quite a hard edge. At what point do you stop and go, wow, I did that really well, or, well, I completed that. Well done. You know, that feels great to get that finished. We don't. We move on to the next task.
It's not a treadmill.
We can become task orientated and not be people orientated. So as long as we're getting the task done, we're doing a good job. Well, and if you've stood on five people to get the task done, you haven't done a good job. That's the reality. You've done the job, but you've hurt people along the way. And there's lots of people out there who are task orientated who are hurting people along the way. They're just doing what needs to be done. And in their mind, they think that's really good.
But they also might be like, oh my God, I've got this huge list, and I need to get it done. I should get it done. I must get it done. And they're like, because things will go badly.
They say, okay.
You get so like.
Yeah. Well, that's anxious driven right there. The list.
Yeah.
And so I just want to go back to the list because yes, a list is good. But a list for one day, it would be great if it only had about, you know, four things on it, four or five, maybe four on your list that you can complete for that day. And it might be, I need to get the washing, I'll do the washing, vacuum the house, go and do the shopping, pay this bill. Yeah, there's the things that's my list for the day.
Yeah.
It's not going to, clean the garage, I've still got this to do and I've got that to do, wash the windows or, mow the lawns. It's overwhelming. It's too much. You're never going to complete. You'll never get that feeling of, I did a great job today, completed that list. So a list in its most helpful form, maybe four or five things on there that you would do for the day. Not one you're going to roll out like some scroll that keeps rolling out and you never get to the end of it.
So how did we get here? We started off talking about grief and now we're talking about lists. Well, lists as a stick to beat ourselves with it, I think is what we're really talking about and using that strong language, forceful language.
You should be and you need to. We started with grief, but when we say the word grief, instantly, what comes to my mind is a loss of a person. And I think that's what it's like for a lot of people. We think of that. But grief is many forms of so many different ways that grief can sit in us. And as humans, we're not often in our more softer emotions where I'm hurting. This is causing me pain. I'm grieving right now. And we will tend to move back from that and go and blame somebody or look for excuses or push back so that we don't have to feel what we're feeling. And so, like I said, watching Inside Out, is a great
the movie.
Great little movie to watch. Watch it with your kids, watch it with adult eyes, and you can see why the feeling of sadness, if we try and push it away from us, that every other emotion in us is going to be affected by that. It's a part of who we are, and we can't avoid it. We can't move away from it. The best way to work with grief is to move through grief, and that is to to feel what we're feeling and acknowledge that. And if there's tears, to allow those tears to come. If there's just being sitting in the moment and allowing things to figure something out and then move through it. But don't push away from it, because layer upon layer, it will sit under most things that we're dealing with.
Mm. All right, Marie. Oh. Sounds good. Thank you for coming in this morning.
You're welcome.
And we'll see you again in a couple of weeks. And I need to choose a song to play. What shall I play? I'm asking you, but you don't know what these songs
are.
Something
nice.
Something nice.
Uplifting.
Something uplifting.
Sunshiny.
Ooh, let me see. Sunshiny. Oh, you want a sunshine song? Hold on.
There we go. I know the one I want.
We'll type. Folks, you just got to stand by while I'm typing into the computer. Oh, let's just spell sunshine correctly. Everybody loves the sunshine? No? Are you talking about the Bill Withers song?
Yeah, I think so. It's on my mind.
Stand by, folks. Stand by. Ain't no sunshine?
No.
Not that one? Oh, yeah. What about this one? Bill Withers' Lovely Day. Here we go. This sounds good. Oh, someone's texted me, but sorry.
It's probably the song.
Strawberry 23. What the heck? That doesn't mean anything to me.
It's probably the song.
This is, you can't hear it, but this is Bill Withers' Lovely Day. Marie, thank you for coming into the studio. Welcome. See you again in a couple of weeks.
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes, and something without warning, love, bears heavy on my mind. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day. Instead of me, always seems to know the way. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day. And I know it's gone.